Hey gang, quick bit of housekeeping for you before we start the show. And this is only relevant to those of you who listen to us on the Apple Podcasts app or via Apple. So if you don't, move along, as the great Obi-Wan Kenobi would say, nothing to see here. But if you do listen to us via Apple, listen carefully, particularly if you're an old school listener of the show. Before we became the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, when we were the NFL show, you would have got the show updated when we moved without having to do a thing. But that's because the old show had a divert put on it. So to check, you're subscribed to the new feed because the old one is going to go pretty soon. Check out the Nat Coombs Show. Search for it on the app via the podcast browse section or the store section if you're looking on the desktop, and find our show and see if it shows whether you're subscribed or not. If you are, great, you're on the right feed. If you're not, hit subscribe and delete the old one. So head on over, not in your library, but actually onto Apple. Search the Nat Coombs Show. Make sure you're subscribed to the feed that you find. Simple. Good luck. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. It has been a sensational 48 hours in the NFL. Rounds 1-3 of the 2020 draft in the bag, and we're going to break them down for you. Who better than Ben Isaacs, who gave us that seminal 10 things you need to know about the 2020 draft, or how about 10 things you need to know about the 2020 draft part 2, coming your way right now. Ben Isaacs, great to have you back on. And it makes a huge amount of sense because the last time we spoke to you, less than a week ago, it was 10 things you need to know about the 2020 NFL draft. This is like your Godfather part 2 coming up now, right? 10 things you need to know now. The draft is pretty much happened. Certainly the big rounds are happened.
I'm glad you went with Godfather part 2 rather than say Back to the Future part 2, which I rewatched on the Easter weekend. And there's just so much going on. Yeah. And it's like, this is a bit of a confusing mess. It's ambitious.
They get it back in part 3, I feel, with the Wild West.
That's controversial. That feels like another, podcast. But yeah, I'll go with Godfather part 2.
The Temple of Doom.
That's less. Oh man, I don't.
Empire Strikes Back. Hey, there we go.
Empire Strikes Back. Wow. Okay.
Before we get into business, since your last appearance, where we talked about the horse racing machine in Las Vegas, quite a few listeners have been in touch with us about this. So have managed to, do you want the good news or the bad news?
Well, give me the bad news first.
Okay. The bad news is, at the moment, there isn't one of them anymore in Las Vegas. The Sigma horse racing machine, the last one was at the MGM, so we were basically playing on the last one all those years ago. And one of our listeners fired out a tweet to us letting us know that it was pulled from the casino in around 2016, I think 2017. That's the bad news. The good news is, I was then sent a link to a Facebook group for Sigma horse racing enthusiasts. There is a Facebook group with about 2,000 people on it, all of whom share the same love that we have for this wonderful thing. And the company's got out of business, but there are various venues all around the world that are trying to bring it back, the company, the game, and bringing the nostalgia back into business. So we will find somewhere to go and play that game again. Even if I have to shell out thousands to have one in my home, Ben Isaacs, I will make sure that it is done.
Well, if not, I think ESPN European headquarters in Hammersmith, West London, there has to be space in there for one of these
definitely
machines.
Definitely space in there.
ESPN, make it happen. You're the worldwide leader in sports. You can do this.
I'm going to talk to Ollie and Harry and make sure that it is a contractual obligation. When we season 2, we make sure that is in there. That is part of the rider that we want. We want one of those. So that was my Vegas Sigma horse racing news. And of course, Vegas, which was touted as the venue and confused as hell now, Commissioner Goodell. Is it going to be what is going on? Is Vegas? It's not next year. It's the year after. So the Goodell misspoke. Fair enough. It was he had a lot to deal with, and it was all kinds of stuff going on. But I really got my hopes up. I thought, well, okay, when all this horrible coronavirus is over, we're going to be this time next year in Las Vegas. But no, 2022, it's going back to Vegas, right?
Yeah, 2021 is in Cleveland. Pause for applause.
You're thrilled.
And then Vegas. I mean, I was sat watching Goodell struggling to get any of his words out at that point, with my 8-year-old daughter, who was kind of struggling with being up so late, and it was her decision, not mine. She demanded to be able to get up.
And she's like, "Dad of the year, Ben Isaacs."
Yeah, I know.
I wasn't being facetious. I love it. I love the fact that that's like when my eldest day, well, he woke up technically and caught the Minnesota Miracle, which is pretty much the first football he'd ever seen.
Oh, God.
And then thought, well, this is how he woke up, came downstairs. What that happened within 5 minutes and thought, this is all footballers like this.
Well, it was like me as a little kid watching the 85 Bears thinking, oh, it'll be like this every year.
Yeah, not so much. How many tight ends did the 85 Bears have on their roster?
Not 10. Unbelievably. I mean, I'd like to look back through the winning rosters of every Super Bowl winning roster and see if anyone has 10 at any point, even if it was at the start of, start of training camp, whether any took 10 tight ends into training camp. I'm not convinced that anyone's had 10 training camp tight ends or 10 in April. I cannot get my head around it. It's so Bears.
Something tells me the Bears aren't going to be one of your winners of the 2020 draft so far, but that is what we're going to break down. 10 things you need to know about rounds 1 to 3. We're recording this on Saturday morning. We thought we'd hold fire and get rounds 2 and 3 in because as we said on last week's show, such a deep draft class, and you look at a lot of those names that came off the board in round 2. And as you suggested, Ben, a lot of them in other years might well, could well, probably would have been round 1 picks, and a lot of them day 1 starters, you think, as well. So there are 10 different things we're going to run through. Let's start with the overall construct and the overall execution of the draft logistically in broadcast terms as well. We mentioned Commissioner Goodell, and it was some incredibly awkward moments. My personal favorite was the camera came back to him to announce the pick. He was dropping a line to the fans on the screen in an awkward pain. And the writing didn't improve. I thought, okay, well, each time he's given, he's kind of, sometimes he didn't even go with words. He just kind of hand gestures. Other times he was, oh, you guys, come on, you can do better than that. And I was thinking, okay, at some point somebody is going to be, you know, they would get on the phone to sitcom writers right now who are presumably not in production and just say, okay, for at least picks 10 to 32, let's give them some decent material. Who signed that?
At certain points with poor Roger Goodell, I was cringing so hard. I thought my body was going to turn inside out. It was so hard to watch at certain times. And I like the fact that he knows he's going to get booed. So he's decided, I'm just going to own it and be like, yeah, come on, boo. I want you to boo, like he's kind of Vince McMahon or something. But that bit didn't really work, but it was wonderful being able to see inside everyone's homes.
Right.
I found that absolutely fascinating.
I mean, so much to talk. We could spend a whole show on that, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Quite frankly, there was, I guess, things that really stood out for me were, well, Cliff Kingsbury 100% stood out for me. The extraordinary pad that he had. And it wasn't just it wasn't the style per se. That was significant, but it was also the framing of the shot, you know, so it was kind of side on cinematic, just leaning back on the, slouching on the sofa with this giant screen TV about 50 meters away from him. And then this expansive sculpted garden from floor to ceiling. Windows. I mean, incredible.
Yeah, and he's there, no socks. He's got his loafers on up on the coffee table. Yeah. Like, bear in mind, when he was coach of Texas Tech, the fans used to hold up signs saying, our coach is hotter than your coach. And this was like him saying, my house is hotter than your house. And not just because it's in Arizona. And I've been to that part of Arizona and a lot of the houses are like that. I did do a little bit of research. He paid $4.5 million.
Amazing. That's quite stalkery. I love it. Very journalistic of you.
But the thing is that if you were like $4.5 million, I can't off the top of my head tell you what that is in pounds sterling, but imagine the price of that house if it was in London. It'd be about 50 billion. I think he got good value. You know, forget about value draft picks. He got good value at $4.5 million for that house because I looked at some other picks from the inside and it is tasty.
I like the style of it, as you say as well. I think not just the pace of it. And we were doing the broadcast live on radio, of course, and Ollie was running the show there, as with Greg, Brady, Will Gavin, the three of us. And it was interesting, I guess, from that perspective to acclimatize. We hadn't done it before. ESPN, NFL Network hadn't done it before. So I think everybody was kind of feeling their way through a little bit, but it was, the speed of it felt on point. I think a lot of people have commented on the lack of pomp and ceremony is a good thing. Ross Tucker said that on this very show a few weeks ago, that he was looking forward to the draft for that very reason. And I kind of agree. I still think it had the right balance. That my view might be distorted because I was broadcasting it, but I do feel that the whole thing worked. And it also had a strong sense of, it was very of the moment, I think, with the, you know, human elements and family in particular. And so you had GMs or coaches with their kids around them a lot of the time, or even just without that, just a domesticated. So I can't remember who it was, but someone was going to the fridge and getting something out of the fridge, just pottering around their business. Yeah. Like, oh, the NFL draft's going on, and my other half's sitting in front of a screen about to make a pick, but I'm just going to go and use the blender and make us a shake, or whatever was going on. So I like that. I think it worked, Ben.
No, absolutely. 100%. I'm not saying I'd want to see it every year, obviously, but everybody at the moment pretty much is stuck at home and having to kind of work around the restrictions, and seeing even, you know, the number one draft pick or NFL head coaches and GMs being in the exact same situation where you might be trying to work and you've got a small child coming in disturbing you. It personalized everything, and you were able to relate to these people in ways that you wouldn't have been doing if they were there with the Bellagio fountains, you know, being taken across a little lake.
2022, so, we can look forward to that. So it's a very unorthodox and surreal in some respects, and altogether different. But at the same time, you look at the first 10 picks and no massive surprise. Certainly the first 8, I think, completely logical, and you could really kind of pull down further. I know there are a number of players that really in the first 16 that could have interchanged, particularly the lower down you go. But all this talk in the build-up to it, getting a lot of heat and traction, that the Dolphins were going to make a play from 5 to 3 for the Lions spot. This crazy suggestion that they were going to take an offensive tackle with that pick. Mm-hmm. We had Gettleman might be looking at trading the Giants pick down. The Redskins were suddenly worried about Dwayne Haskins. Were they going to take a quarterback? And all of this stuff, whether it was smoke and mirrors or otherwise, didn't pan out. And the top 7, 8 made a huge amount of sense. The Dolphins doing what the fan base wanted, and I think to widespread acclaim, taking Tua, taking that gamble, if they even see it as that. Justin Herbert, I suppose that was the only major question mark. If the Chargers were big on Tua as well, then would Herbert be the one that fell, or vice versa? But they took the plunge and took Justin Herbert there. Isaiah Simmons going to Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals, again, just such a simpatico pick as well. So a lot of the opening made a huge amount of sense. Let's talk about the day one quarterbacks then, your second point. So the day one quarterbacks that went, Tua, of course, going at number 5 overall, and Justin Herbert at number 6. And then the big shock of the draft with the Green Bay Packers, surprising many of us, although they were one of the teams that had been linked with him, taking Jordan Love as the other quarterback to go in round one. But you think in each of those situations, Ben, they've landed in the right place.
Yeah, none of these guys are stepping into a nightmare, which is sometimes the case with first round quarterbacks. Obviously, with the way the draft works, the worse you are, the earlier your pick, and quarterbacks are always at a premium, so they're more likely to go to those bad teams. With Burrow, obviously the Bengals have got a lot of weaknesses, but they are clearly going to build around Burrow. And the first thing they did in the second round was draft T. Higgins from Clemson, which again highlights how deep this draft is at wide receiver.
So he's a great example of a player that in almost any other year would have been a first rounder, right?
Absolutely. He could have been, in some years, he could have been like, you know, picked in the top 20. So they've got a lot of good value there in those first 33 picks of the draft. They've got those two players. They've got two first round talents, two known winners. They're already giving him a good weapon. T. Higgins will start on day one. As far as Tua Tagovailoa is concerned, he doesn't need to start right away, which is obviously great for him, not just so he can learn the game, but because he's still going to be recovering from that injury. The Dolphins are clearly pointing up. I like the way that they've drafted this year. Everything about the whole tank for Tua last year, and they didn't tank. They showed so much grit and hustle, even though they were lacking in talent. They were not lacking in desire and attitude, which is a really good sign for next season.
With the Dolphins first round, because so rich in many positions, or certain positions, I should say, including tackle. That was, of course, one of the positions that we'd identified as rich in a number of players going in the first round. The Dolphins went Austin Jackson from USC as their choice there. And then the final pick of the first round, they didn't deal out any of them, which was a suggestion, of course, if they had traded up from five, that they would have probably, actually, no, they would have flipped that pick and dealt one of their seconds. But nevertheless, they didn't deal out with any of the three picks. They took three players. Was there a surprise with their third pick of the three, given the other cornerbacks on the board, that they went the way they did?
Yeah, he wasn't up there with kind of with my top selections. And if I were them, I would have actually stuck with offense. But I do like him. He wasn't necessarily the best one there, but he's really feisty and he's a really good tackler. So I think he is going to be a nice fit. He's someone who can start pretty quickly. He's got a lot of upside. He's only played two seasons at cornerback. The one thing that I don't like is he's not really had many interceptions. He had one college interception. Mm. And because he's feisty, he has had quite a few pass interference calls. He kind of gets a bit handsy. So not totally polished, but I think he's going to be a starter pretty quickly.
I guess, again, because of the draft capital they had throughout the draft, but certainly in the higher rounds, the Dolphins were prepared to gamble, and the Tua pick is that, whichever way you cut it. I mean, there is a gambling, whatever, you know, medical sign off he's had, there is always going to be a risk that if you're hit, the type of injury you had, there could be a significant impact there. So they didn't face him, to take him at five as well, to spend a pick there as opposed to, you know, 32 or lower. Going back to the Packers and Jordan Love, which was one of the major stories, of course, of the first round and still is raging on. So the Packers taking Love at 26, the Utah State quarterback, loads of buzz about him. More raw talent, I think, more of a developmental quarterback than some of the others in the first round. The Saints were linked with him as well. So teams with aging quarterbacks that are maybe coming towards the end of their career, there was a suggestion that the Patriots were quite interested in him as well. And the Packers were a team linked with him. So there wasn't per se a huge surprise there. But when you think about it, Aaron Rodgers, compared to, say, Drew Brees, has, you would think, if injury notwithstanding, a few more years in the tank. And there are so many different elements to this, right? The way that Rodgers came into the Packers and sat under Favre for a while and was the heir apparent, and they didn't particularly get on. And Favre eventually was the one that lost out on that battle, a Packers legend. And history could, of course, repeat itself with Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers.
Now, the thing is, there are going to be a lot of, on the surface, there's a lot of comparisons with the way that Rodgers was drafted late in the first round by the Packers, when they already had Brett Favre, and Jordan Love now drafted late in the first round when they've already got Aaron Rodgers. But it's not quite the same, because Rodgers fell into Green Bay's lap. There was talk of Rodgers going number one. So for him to fall at that point, Green Bay didn't trade up. He was there, and it would have been crazy to not take him. He was just too incredibly talented to pass up. There was also the fear that Favre was going to step away from the game at that point. Now, with this, they made a point of trading up. The Packers of 2020 are pushing more chips in on Jordan Love than the Packers did for Aaron Rodgers when he was drafted in 05, which is quite remarkable. If you draft someone in the first round, you are expecting them to be the starter within 2 years.
Yeah.
And that is a fact. Now, since Aaron Rodgers was selected 24th in 05, there have been 41 quarterbacks selected in the first round. 41. 40 of them were the starter within two seasons. The only one who wasn't was Paxton Lynch. Now, you cannot tell me, and I'm not saying that anyone is telling me, but you can't tell me that anyone at the Packers is thinking, oh, we'll get this, we'll trade up for this guy in the first round, but we don't intend to start him anytime soon. This puts Rodgers on notice, and Rodgers does not play well with others. Let's say he leads the league in interceptions that were not his fault, and incompletions that were not his fault. He's always had a chip on his shoulder about the fact that he fell in the 05 draft, and he's very different to Favre in that way. Favre is someone who, although very driven and a competitor, always seemed to love the fact that he was getting paid to play in the NFL, was getting paid to break records and do all these things and win a Super Bowl ring.
They're very different characters, aren't they? I mean, very different styles of quarterback as well, but very different characters. I mean, Favre is the prototype of the good old boy quarterback, you know, the square jawed, rabble rousing, I'm going to, you know, lead, incredibly physical type player and a huge gambler as well, wasn't he? Whereas Rodgers is a bit more understated, more cerebral. He's definitely got fire in his belly, no doubt about that, but a different kind of player. He signed a 4-year extension in the summer of 2018, $134 million. So that runs through, his contract runs through the 2023 season. So kind of doing the maths here, yeah, there's going to not be a not dissimilar situation. And of course, Favre was different where he was flirting with retirement for a number of seasons and eventually the kind of Packers moved on. And it's a great point you make that Aaron Rodgers could have gone one in that draft, was falling down. Jordan Love was not going to go number one in this draft. So it's a different play here. And it is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. A lot of our listeners have got in touch with different questions and different thoughts about the draft so far. Gary, what do you think Aaron Rodgers' attitude is going to be with the Packers trading up for a first-round quarterback? Not great.
Not great, Bob.
But at the same time, he hasn't had a huge amount of competition, of course, for the majority. Has he really had any kind of significant competition?
No, not really.
So,
yeah, I mean, he'll be professional about it. He will be seething inside, but he's not going to get sort of like super petulant. He's going to be doing and saying the right things. Someone has said to me, "Oh, it's going to really motivate him." And I said, he's so incredibly motivated anyway. I don't think he can be any more motivated than he is. That's the one he doesn't lack is motivation. So I'm like, Jordan Love will learn so much from being around Aaron Rodgers.
Well, that's a point that actually another listener of ours, Martin Cattle, makes at the NC show, if you want to get in touch with us, incidentally. He said, Love's pick has been made for the future to learn from one of the best in the game. And that is obviously the plan, right? But it depends how receptive Rodgers is to that. I guess you've just by osmosis and just by close association, you're going to pick up a huge amount anyway. But that is predicated on Alex Smith is a great example here with, and of course, a different player, although intrinsically linked with Aaron Rodgers, because he was the one that did go number one overall in the draft that Rodgers fell. But Smith's relationship with Patrick Mahomes is not to be underestimated and was instrumental, I think, in the speed of Mahomes' evolution, because he was hands-on and prepared to support him. And I know that was different for obvious reasons, but it's not wildly different either. And I'm not sure Rodgers is going to necessarily apply that kind of fraternal big brother guiding him through every step. If you say, and again, whether we buy into this media image or this perception of him, and that is maybe unfair, and those closer to him would suggest otherwise, but that is the vibe that we get, isn't it? That he's not going to be that kind of quarterback here.
No, and certain players have come out who've left the Packers and spoken anonymously and said he is incredibly difficult to get along with. He's not a friendly person, but you don't always need it. You're right. It's not going to be a kind of fraternal thing. But if Jordan Love is in that quarterback room having to work with Aaron Rodgers all the time, Aaron Rodgers is probably the most talented quarterback of his generation. It is impossible for Jordan Love to not benefit from that. There are going to be awkward moments, but there's no way he won't learn from it.
So the day one quarterback's in a decent position. The Packers, looking like they're expecting Jordan Love to be their starting quarterback. At least that's the statement they made by 2022 at the latest. And hey, it would be incredible if that happened sooner. We love the whole logistic of the draft. So 3 key points down, 7 to go. Let's go to the Raiders next. Because the Raiders are always a lot of fun on draft day. Although I was a little bit disappointed. We talked about the fans in the screen that Commissioner Goodell was, as you say, Vince McMahon-ing up. And the Raider Nation was obviously carefully selected, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I was disappointed it wasn't a little bit more Mad Max than it.
Yeah.
The Raiders, Ben, you feel have had the most Raiders first 3 rounds possible. So talk us through why you think the Raiders have lived up to type. 2 first round picks, of course, and they went with Henry Ruggs, the first receiver off the board at number 12. And of course, Al Davis is looking down from high above, delighted with that pick given his
predilection. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? If you woke up from a coma right? And you didn't know that Al Davis had died. And you saw this draft, you think, oh, classic Al Davis.
Ben, if you woke up from a coma and you turned on this draft, you would think, what the hell is going on? And then it cuts to Tom Brady and Gronk.
What
happened?
But yeah, it's like Al Davis was picking from beyond the grave. Henry Ruggs III was, he was not the best wide receiver available at that point. Probably the third best wide receiver available, but they took him number one. Al Davis often had a draft board that was different to other teams, that other teams would agree on certain orders and he'd be like, nope, that guy's my guy. So the fact that the Raiders went with the incredibly fast wide receiver, Henry Ruggs III, rather than CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, just felt very Raiders. And
but
then,
I think Mike Mayock has laid his cards on the table as well, right? With that last year's draft was a good example of that, that it was criticized. And I get that it still will be because Cleveland Farrell hasn't lived up to that higher pick particularly. But even with the Josh Jacobs pick, everything he did in the first round, everyone said, well, I don't know, as he reached up in each of these situations, these are the right picks for the Raiders. But he has real conviction. All GMs have conviction in their decisions, but Mayock doesn't seem to be swayed by what it should be done, what the book says, what the mock drafts are saying, what the experts are saying in terms of the ranking of that particular player. He seems to be go out and get what he wants regardless.
And I respect that massively. Mm-hmm. And he had come into the draft saying that they really needed wide receivers. And the fact that he then just kept taking wide receivers was an interesting decision. I mean, they took three potentially very exciting wide receivers, because as well as Ruggs, they took Lynn Bowden Jr., who's played a lot of quarterback as well, which means they could be doing some wildcat packages. Edwards has second round talent, but he broke his foot a couple of months ago, so there's a little bit of a risk there. So they've got talent. And away from offense, with their 19th pick, it was Damon Arnett from Ohio State.
Mm.
And most teams didn't have him up so high.
So he was one of the cornerbacks on the board, yeah. And so was he the second corner to go? I'm trying to think. He was the second. So Henderson went to the Jags at 9, of course, and then he was number 2.
Yeah, and most people wouldn't have had him at number 2. The biggest knock on him as being coachability, that he's not good at taking coaching, that he can have a little bit of an attitude.
Gruden will take care of that.
Well, exactly, and Al Davis loved those guys of like, oh, this guy's a maverick. He's an outlaw. Yeah, he's a raider. Yeah.
He's a raider.
You know, and Damon Arnett is speedy too. So he took potentially risky players, but players who've got very big upsides. He went for speed. He went for wide receivers who can make an impact. He went for exciting players. So Al Davis would be very pleased with the way that Mayock did this. And it was just, like I said, it was just so Raiders. It was just the most Raiders thing ever. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because a lot of people be like, oh yeah, the Raiders, they, you know, I mean, the Raiders, they're a whole old slogan of commitment to excellence. It sounds a little bit of a joke now because they've not been postseason contenders, but this is a franchise with a tradition of excellence. So that's all from Al Davis. And this really felt like Mayock even more than last year having his Al Davis moment. And I'm glad it happened. I'm glad that there is that teams can have that sort of personality.
The Raiders then winners in Ben Isaacs' book by the sound of it. I'm with you as well. I like the fact that they have followed the history that, but at the same time stayed true to themselves with the Mayock MO and some exciting players with a huge amount of upside, it seems. I always like teams that draft multiple receivers.
Yeah.
That's what the Raiders have done.
They didn't just do multiple receivers in consecutive picks, because they had two picks in a row. Yeah, two wide receivers, please.
I saw somebody suggesting they might do that in the first round, which would have been awesome, but yeah. Disappointed that they didn't. A team that did take a receiver in the first round were the Minnesota Vikings, one of the teams that took a receiver in the first round. Of course, they weren't the only one. And Justin Jefferson, the LSU receiver, went to them at 22. Huge value there. Seems a bit of a steal to me. And overall, you like what the Vikings have done in the draft, Ben?
Yeah, to me, they won day one. Thursday night, they just knocked out of the park, to kind of mix the sports metaphors.
Nice.
Justin Jefferson is an outstanding wide receiver. And everyone who listens to your podcast will have heard me say a million times, there is so much depth at wide receiver this year. Mm. And Justin Jefferson going at number 22 tells you all you need to know about that, because he's incredibly talented and in other years would have been, you know, a top 10 guy. They got him at 22, and then they had the number 31 picked, and that was Jeff Gladney, who is probably the second best cornerback as far as I'm concerned. Those are two players who will start on day one. Jefferson is going to be just absolutely outstanding in the slot. Kirk Cousins is going to love him. And the thing is they didn't just get these guys. They were able to trade from 25 to 31 to take Gladney. They wanted Gladney. They were able to move back and get extra mid-round picks to stock up. So,
in a
kudos.
To make, and then and luck, it wasn't luck, but fortuitous in the sense that Igbin again, he went to the Finns. And as we said earlier on, that was, you know, maybe the right fit for them, but a little bit of a reach. And Arnett going to the Raiders as well at 19, when a lot of predicted boards didn't have either of them going ahead of Gladney. Real fortuitous play for the Vikings there.
Yeah, and getting that, and because Rick Spielman, the GM in Minnesota, has shown kind of what a savvy operator he is in the draft, them getting those extra mid-round picks to move down six spaces, you would expect him to get good value in those as well. So when you've got a guy who was able to get the right players at good positions and acquire extra draft picks, which he's then going to use to just further stock that roster, the Vikings, to me, have put themselves kind of like in the leader's position in the NFC North kind of almost overnight.
I'll go to the mailbag quickly, actually. Aaron Edwards. Hey, Aaron, at the NC show, if you do want to get in touch with us, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, what are your thoughts on Seattle taking a linebacker in the first round? So Jordan Brooks, the Texas Tech linebacker, going to the Seahawks at 27. What kind of player are the Seahawks getting there, Ben?
He's just the sort of player that they like to do with the defenses that they have had when they have been successful. He's that sort of fit, in that he's a rangy guy who can play on the edge and get pressure on the quarterback. It was a position of need. They need a pass rush guy. He had his ups and downs. I'm not gonna lie to you there, but he's got massive upside.
Were you surprised that they didn't go Patrick Queen, who went one slot below them to Ravens at 28? Because he was getting a lot of buzz coming into the draft.
He was, but this, I cannot argue with the Darryl Taylor pick, because if you see some of his highlights, the kind of the burst that he has, very explosive. His issue is kind of, he's very strong kind of up against those guards, but he can get kind of caught in a block. But he does remind me of the sort of linemen and linebackers that they've kind of built those sort of smaller, speedy defenses in Seattle. I do like the pick. He's very good with his hands. And I think Pete Carroll has shown that he likes those guys. So I would actually give that a thumbs up. I know it kind of, a lot of people are like, I like him.
Another one from Michael. Are the Broncos the winner of the offseason? Brought in starters in free agency, including AJ Boye. Glasgow as well went there, didn't he? And then two dynamic wide receivers, including Jerry Jeudy. Jeudy falling to the Broncos. John Elway was very happy about that. They're building an offense around Drew Locke. He seems to be the quarterback they are pinning their hopes on. And they've had a lot of issues, of course, in recent years with finding that starter, finding that franchise quarterback to build the team around. But they are nailing their colors to the mask on Drew Locke, and not just, of course, by giving him the starting gig and the vote of confidence, but by arming him with receivers. Is it a case, do you think, of the Broncos 15 Jerry Jeudy fell to? We've got to take Jeudy because he's still on the ball. Were they looking for a receiver, you think, irrespective of which one was going to go there because it was such a deep class? Do you reckon they pivoted their game plan because Jeudy was available? What do you make of the Jeudy pick?
I think they wanted receivers, and I think the Broncos are putting together the ideal offense for Drew Luck. And the same can be said for the Colts and Philip Rivers. But to talk about the Broncos, getting Jerry Jeudy at 15 is an absolute steal. I know some people preferred CeeDee Lamb, but Jerry Jeudy at 15 is great value. Then they took a wide receiver in the next round, KJ Hamler of Penn State. So they got him at number 46. Now, opinions are mixed on him. He's a smaller guy, but he's a high risk, high reward sort of player. Some durability issues, You don't want him to kind of get hit quite too much, but he is a fast guy. And I think you having Drew Lock, having Hamler and Judy as fresh new receivers is going to be a dream come true for him. I want to mention the Colts because I like Michael Pittman Jr., the receiver that they drafted. I absolutely love the Wisconsin running back they took, Jonathan Taylor, in the second round. Now, it can be difficult drafting running backs because they sort of feel like 10 a penny, but he had such an outstanding career at Wisconsin. I'm not going to put him in the kind of in the Zeke Elliott sort of mold, obviously, but he's kind of a rung below Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
And there's the rung that comes below that is, you know, there's a gap, but he is on that next tier. And I think they can get an outstanding 4 years out of him. Philip Rivers will be able to hand the ball off to him a lot, as well as finding Michael Pittman Jr. I don't know if the Broncos won the offseason, but I really like what they're doing for Drew Lock.
Yeah, Taylor going at 41 overall, ninth in the second round, the second running back to go off the board. DeAndre Swift, the first, of course, but neither going in the first round. Swift going to the Lions with the third pick. Finally, the Lions might have some kind of running game. I'm sure Marek and Sam Tai, friends of the show and big Lions fans, will be happy about that pick. I know Marek was keen for them to look at Swift. A surprise, maybe the Dolphins didn't go there. They could have done, of course, with any of their three first-round picks, and maybe they were hoping that Swift was going to fall to them at seven, but he didn't. Ben, let's look at day two then, second and third rounds. If you feel that the Vikings won day one, which team do you think won day two?
There are a lot of disagreements here. Lots of people have got their opinions, but I would give it to the Ravens. And that's partly because they had so many picks in the second and third rounds, but I really love what they did with them. And they injected a lot of new young talent.
J.K. Dobbins, you loved before, and you said was going you singled him out as a player to keep an eye on. So he's fallen there.
Yeah. I mean, having him being able to kind of work with Mark Ingram, as running backs for Lamar Jackson's offense, it just seems like a match made in heaven. I think that will be fantastic. Devin DuVernay, wide receiver. He's a possession receiver. He's not kind of a game breaker, but just another thing for Lamar Jackson. Like Lamar Jackson doesn't even need that much help, but I feel they've made a team that perhaps should have done better in the postseason and made it absolutely outstanding. I'm really excited to see the defensive players they picked as well. I think Malik Harrison of Ohio State, who was late in the third round, is a really good value guy.
He's a linebacker.
Yeah. Interesting to see how he works with Patrick Queen. But yeah, to me, the Ravens seem to just stock so many fantastic, fantastic players in the second and third round. Cause I was not surprised they took Patrick Queen, which, you know, just seemed like an obvious one for them.
Very Ravens pick, wasn't it?
Very, very Ravens. I mean, he's not Ray Lewis, but he's a really good kind of sideline to sideline guy, brainy linebacker. But yeah, that was round one. But yeah, they had so many in the second and third rounds that even if they'd just been okay, they would have stocked up. But I think they did really well with pretty much every single pick.
All right, let's talk about one of the other major stories that has gone down in the draft so far. And I think it's a real surprise on a number of different levels. And we talked about the quarterbacks that we expected to go in the first round, and all three did, right? All four did. There were no real surprises there. I guess Jordan Love was the only one that there was a question mark of whether he'd go first round overall. But then this second tier of quarterbacks, differing levels, I think, of progression and NFL readiness. And one of the most divisive out of all of that group was Jalen Hurts, who was the former Alabama quarterback, the former Alabama starter, who lost his starting gig, as you pointed out on the show last week, Ben, to Tua, and then pivoted over to Oklahoma and rebuilt his career there and showed a huge amount of strength of character as a result of that. A lot of people love his moxie, his attitude, that he's a fighter and he's a winner. But no doubt about it, for Jalen Hurts to go 53rd overall, the 21st pick of the second round, and going to the Philadelphia Eagles raised a huge amount of collective eyebrows for all kinds of reasons. The fact he went that high, the fact he's gone to Philly, what does that mean for Carson Wentz? What are the Eagles doing with this pick? What do you make of it? Or help us work it out, Ben.
Well, I really like Jalen Hurts. And I was hoping maybe he could fall to the third round, which is where I thought he'd go, and maybe the Bears could get him. I am stunned by this. I'm absolutely stunned he's gone so high, although I get why teams would like his upside. I'm stunned that the Eagles would do it. And to me, it says the Eagles are worried about Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
And if the Eagles worried about Carson Wentz, then if you're an Eagles fan, you had better be very worried about Carson Wentz now. They've got needs all over that roster. And instead they drafted a guy who could be a potential starter somewhere in the next couple of years. Now, I've seen some people speculate they're going to use him like Taysom Hill. I do not buy that at all. Taysom Hill gets like 10 to 15 snaps a game. Are you going to use a second round pick on someone who gets 10 to 15 snaps a week?
It is worth putting out in the Eagles' defense. It's worth pointing out their next pick after that was 103rd, right? So yeah. If he's projected a late second round or third round pick, most people's boards had him as a third round pick, right? Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
If he was projected there and there's a huge amount of confidence and conviction from the Eagles, this is a guy that when he's not going to fall to us in round three, we really, really like him. He's a great character. He's got a huge amount of upside potential here. Let's go and get him. Is it that crazy a pick? Are we joining the dots a bit too readily here to say, what are the concerns about Carson Wentz? They're saying it's the durability. He's never been the same after the injury. They've got health concerns. I don't necessarily think it's as ludicrous a pick for that reason. It's not like they're one of those teams that had, you know, three or four picks in the second or third round, like the Ravens, for example, and could have definitely got their man a little bit lower. If they really wanted him, Ben, they might have thought, well, he's not going to fall to us in the next round, so we've got to get him now.
I think it's fascinating that they really wanted him. I'm with you 100%. I think they did really want him. And it's like I've said about Mitch Trubisky in the past, where the Bears traded up to get him, rightly or wrongly. That was the person they wanted. They were all in on Mitch Trubisky and would do what they could to make it a success. And that to me is how the Eagles are about this, because.
And that's gone well.
Yeah, well, exactly. But you know, it's like you show your conviction rather than just like, we'll just take this guy.
A believer in that. I buy that, and I don't want to labor the point about Mayock, but I like that style. I think that, you know, there are experts everywhere. There is obviously a limit to this in terms of reaching. But if this is the player you want, even if other boards have him 10, 15 further down, if that's the guy you want, then take him. You know your team better than anyone else.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they will have spent a lot of time talking to Jalen Hurts, a lot of time watching every single snap that he took at Alabama and Oklahoma, where he was fantastic for both teams. It was only kind of right at the end of at Alabama where he lost his spot. And that was in the postseason. Going at 53, I'm surprised, but this happens with quarterbacks all the time, going higher than we might expect. It's what it says about Wentz, that they like Jalen Hurts so much that they are going to take him at 53, even though they've just given Carson Wentz $128 million. Like, they need wide receivers, and they did take one in the first round. Okay. But that was just like, okay, good start. And then to follow up with a quarterback, they're only going to put one quarterback on the field at a time. And it does make me feel that they know that Carson Wentz cannot finish a season. They've obviously done well with backups over the last few years. You know, sure. Just look at what they did with Nick Foles.
Right.
So I trust their judgment on who's going to back up Carson Wentz. Josh McCown did a fantastic job, just couldn't quite get them a playoff win, but that's, you know, I'm not going to criticize him for that. If Jalen Hurts is who they think he is, then that means they think he's going to be a starter there.
Yeah, I mean, the comparisons have been made with Russell Wilson. Of course, Wilson was a third round pick, went in the 70s when he was drafted. And a lot of comparisons, I think, have been made about the overall character as well as the style of play as well. And the fact that when Wilson was drafted anyway and was a prospect, he was not considered the finished article, hence why he was drafted in the third round. Kurt Warner made that comparison after the Eagles made the pick last night. What do you make of that? Do you think that, I mean, that's obviously the perfect upside, right? If he ends up, being Russell Wilson, I think they're going to be quite happy with that. But there's similarities beyond the obvious of a lower round quarterback that people like in terms of character, that see there is potential in terms of skill set, but it represents a bit of a risk, or at least a developmental prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I would say another connection with Russell Wilson is that they both transferred to other universities so right. they could get even more experience. Not because they hadn't been able to get games. They had both been starting and then both finished their career very well in a completely different part of the country, playing a full season at a major program. So these guys are competitors. And to flip back to Trubisky's someone who came in with a very, very short CV in terms of starts, whereas Russell Wilson did not, Jalen Hurts did not. These guys have got a lot of mental upside, but have also got lots and lots of experience. Very intelligent players who process the game very well, got a lot of physical skills. You know, it's kind of generous to say that Jalen Hurts is a Russell Wilson, but there's more upside on the surface to Jalen Hurts now than there was to Russell Wilson on the day he was drafted. So yes, they'll be thrilled if he becomes another Russell Wilson. He doesn't need to be a Russell Wilson to be a success. And I do think he's got the ability to be a success with the right team. I worry that the Eagles are not the right team for him, because this is a team that does not seem committed to helping their quarterbacks. They seem committed to replacing their quarterbacks. Yeah. They should have been drafting offensive weapons. They're just so thin at wide receiver that if Carson Wentz gets hurt in preseason and Jalen Hurts starts in day one, who is he throwing the ball to on a consistent basis? That's my issue.
Well, Jalen Reagor, apparently, which was a bit of a head scratcher as well.
That doesn't thrill me.
Yeah, he was a receiver that certainly ended up going higher than the projections had suggested. All right, Ben, three rounds down, eight of your points down, two more to go. Let's talk about the remaining quarterbacks that didn't go on the first 2 days. Which of them are the most interesting as far as you're concerned?
In terms of talent, I think it's going to be Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm. These, in fact, not just these are the two best quarterbacks who didn't get picked. These are the two best players who didn't get picked in the first 2 days. And some people say you should draft a quarterback every year. So it'll be intriguing when we find out who actually picks these guys. So let's compare Jake Fromm to someone like Mitch Trubisky, who I keep bringing up. So Jake Fromm, quarterback from Georgia. Now, Trubisky is very athletic, strong arm, but reads the field very slowly and has accuracy issues. Fromm is the absolute opposite. He's pedestrian when it comes to his arm and his body movement, but is exceptionally accurate and is a brainy quarterback. Now, coaches know they can't teach athleticism. You know, you couldn't get Mike Vick and teach him to play like Mike Vick. You can't teach athleticism and arm talent. So they're going to worry about Fromm's upside, because they already know the things that he can do, and the things he can't do, they're not convinced they can get him to do. Whereas with someone like Trubisky, they'll have seen his raw talent, his athletic ability and all those things, and think, okay, we can coach him into being a very intelligent on-field player who makes great decisions. And that has not been the case. I really like Jake Fromm. I keep saying I want to reclaim the phrase game manager. He's a game manager in the same way Joe Burrow is also a bit of a game manager. Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than Jake Fromm, but I think he's a really intriguing quarterback. I'm more interested in him than Jacob Eason, who I think has a lot of accuracy issues. He's got upside, but he's got quite a low ceiling. So I'm excited. I'm excited for Jake Fromm, because I think he's someone who could have a really good NFL career. And that doesn't sound exciting, like a really good NFL career, but someone who could be a starter for quite a while.
All right. 10th point, and it is the New England Patriots. It isn't Bill Belichick's dog that appeared at one point looking like he was going to be making the pick. Again, one of the great images of the first couple of days. But the Patriots who dealt out of their first round, they did a deal with the Chargers. They did not have a second round pick at the time. So they, as the Patriots often do, of course, stockpiled value in lower rounds than the first. But that deal enabled them to get a decent second round pick, 37th overall. And they used it, Ben, on quite a surprising choice, didn't they?
Yeah. If you don't know Kyle Duggar yet, you soon will. because I think he's going to have such a fantastic impact. A few months back, I was on the radio with you and we were talking about draft sleepers, and this was someone I brought up, and I think I said that, oh, you know, he could go in the first three rounds, and I wasn't 100% sure he was going to go in the first three rounds. So I was very pleased to be proved right. He played his college football at Lenoir Rhyne. And if you've not heard of that university, I'm going to completely forgive you for that. They play in Division II. He didn't get much interest from any universities when he was in high school, because he didn't start for very long. But he's a perfect fit for Bill Belichick and the Patriots. He's like a mini wrecking ball. Lots to prove, but he's got the brains and the attitude for it. He's a very dynamic athlete. When he was at the Senior Bowl, he wowed people so much then, and that was not a surprise. Mm. He's a good tackler. He's got to work on his coverage. You know, he was able to get to the ball very easily, but that was at Division II. Now, I've got every faith in the Patriots and Bill Belichick that they aren't just going to be like, oh, look, you know, he's making hay against these, you know, no mark colleges. They can see where the true talent is.
Yeah.
He's got that sort of that work ethic and attitude that Bill Belichick will respect and tries to impose on the players who don't have it anyway. He's very versatile. He's a fantastic defender, and he's unpolished, admittedly, but he's going to get that polish with Bill Belichick, and he's going to be a name, and you'll always know Lenoir Rhyne University because of this.
I expect at least 10% of Patriots fans to be getting Lenoir Rhyne merchandise if he plays out, as you suggest he might. Great insight to be calling him all those weeks ago. And the Patriots taking him with their first pick of the 2020 draft, vindicating your faith in him. And absolutely the definition of a sleeper pick there. Loving your work as ever, Ben Isaacs. Great stuff. You need to get some kit because you've had two nights on the bounce.
Yeah.
A wee small hours. So get some rest and come and check in with us soon, man.
Yeah, it all starts again pretty soon.
Looking forward to it. Take care, bud.
Cheers, guys. Bye.
Cracking stuff from Ben. The rest of the rounds playing out, of course, Saturday night. So we are back next week to talk to you about that, and to take stock of all that has happened over the last couple of days. Two terrific guests lined up for you on the pod next week. Tom Deacon and Neil Reynolds, no less. So make sure, if you haven't already, you sub to us. You will not miss a trick. Thanks to all of you. You've got your questions in via social media at The NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Keep those coming in. We'll do our best to answer them on platform or on the show. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.